I want to track out how you do evaluate and manage the patient. Same case, except it's HER2 positive, but just to finish out on the HER2 negative. So I can kind of see, your philosophy in terms of chemotherapy, whether you're going to use it or not. But all these patients are going to get hormonal therapy because of the ER positivity. How do you go about selecting hormonal therapy in this situation, both in the premenopausal patient and the postmenopausal patient?
I think that in the premenopausal patient, for the most part, we're talking about lower risk breast cancer. The treatment of choice is tamoxifen until they become postmenopausal. And sometimes, as you've discussed many times in these programs, that can be hard to tell. In the postmenopausal patients, I think you right now have two choices, and that would be to start with tamoxifen and then plan a switch to an AI, or starting out with an AI like Arimidex or Letrozole, and both of those are approved for upfront use based on ATAC and BIG 198.
Let's switch over and talk a little bit about metastatic disease. In terms of hormones, one of the issues that's a little bit challenging is the sequence of hormones, particularly in the postmenopausal patient. And a lot of times the premenopausal patients are being made postmenopausal. We have a number of different choices. You've got the AIs, you've got tamoxifen, you've got fulvestrin. How do you sort of decide what sequence you're going to use them?
I tend to use all these drugs, and I don't think there's a set sequence yet. There are some studies looking at sequence. The typical sequence before was adjuvant tamoxifen or tamoxifen first and then AIs and so on. That's going to change because we're using a lot more AIs up front and we may not be using much tamoxifen or brief tamoxifen. So I think tamoxifen will remain a viable alternative. I think Faslodex is certainly a viable alternative. We need to get the dose of Faslodex squared away, and there's at least three current dosing schedules, loading dose, and so on, that just hasn't been resolved. And then I think that's inhibitory to planning an adjuvant study with Faslodex. I think that would be a reasonable study to do.
What have you observed while you're talking about Faslodex in terms of, sort of overall responsiveness compared to tamoxifen AIs? As you say, there's some data out there, but what about your personal experience?
Yeah, my personal experience is I've had a number of patients with very long remissions or stable disease with Faslodex, but you've got to get past the first 2 or 3 or 4 months of treatment. And if they're still stable at that time, then they may well have a very prolonged stable response. And that kind of raises this issue that if you're using the standard approved schedule, that you're seeing progression before someone has a steady state level of the drug. And there is this European trial of double dose versus the standard approved dose. I think that will settle it once and for all whether there's any added benefit. And there may not be. It may be that the approved dose is perfectly adequate. It's just we don't know, and that's been a lingering issue since Ken Osborne brought it up years and years ago. So, I tend to use the drugs, and I probably will use AIs first. That's sort of been our routine, and then use Faslodex. I think if you've had an inhibitor like a anastrozole or a letrozole, then you can use exemestane. There's a definable clinical benefit rate. I still like to use Megace in the situation, can come back and recycle and use some of these drugs again. But kind of what I see among a lot of oncologists, particularly younger oncologists that still have a lot of hair and it's not gray, is that they pretty quickly go to chemotherapy. And I think for some patients that's a big mistake because they may have benefited for years and years, long-term responses to some of these agents. You can't predict who it is and suddenly they'll have this miraculous response, 5 years on Megace or, 3.5 years on Faslodex, and all they're getting is a fairly simple hormonal agent with virtually no toxicity.
Yeah, I guess there's always that pressure and that feeling that you want to do something more active or aggressive towards a tumor that prompts a lot of people without too much experience to maybe shortcut hormones.
Well, I think that kind of gets back to your obligation. My obligation is to try to explain the reality to patients that, certainly I see patients who think if they recur, they've got to go on chemo to be aggressive, but they might be an absolute perfect candidate for hormonal treatment and have a very prolonged response. And you really have to convince them, sometimes have to convince them that that's the right thing to do, but that they're not going to lose their hair, they're going to have minimal toxicity from the hormonal treatment. And if it works, it may work for a long time and predicts for other hormonal agents working.